listening to the Assembly Call IU podcast and postgame show, the place where Indiana fans across the globe hang out online after every IU basketball game. Join us for our live broadcasts on Thursday nights and immediately following every IU game at our website, assemblycall.com. That's assemblycall.com. This episode of the Assembly Call is brought to you by SeatGeek. As you know, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There is nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it is by far the easiest way that I have found to shop for tickets because I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats, and I plan to use this. My wife and I have a 17-month-old, haven't been a lot of nights out recently, but we plan to have one soon, and we will definitely be using SeatGeek to find concert tickets so that we can go out and enjoy a nice evening. And we know that SeatGeek will make the ticket buying experience easier than ever because it saves us time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And best of all, Assembly Call listeners get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So just download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code ASSEMBLY today, and you will get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That is promo code ASSEMBLY, A-S-S-E-M-B-L-Y. Welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important IU basketball stories from the past 7 days. This is our 59th edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 372nd episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of Thursday, January 11th, 2018. I'm your host, Jared Morris, and let's begin this week how we begin every episode of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. And the banner moment this week is the way that Indiana started on Tuesday night against Penn State. As I was kind of reflecting on our discussions from the postgame show, it kind of dawned on me that we really didn't talk that much about the way that Indiana started. And it was really clear from the opening tip that Indiana was ready to go against the Nittany Lions. The Hoosiers were playing with great energy and focus, especially on the defensive end. And Juwan Morgan made sure that the Hoosiers got off to a good start offensively by scoring 8 straight points, including 2 3-pointers. And at the first TV timeout, the Hoosiers led 12-8. They extended the lead to 19-13 by the next TV timeout. And it was just a really solid start by Indiana taking control of the game. All right, so what does this matter? It's just the first 8 minutes of a 40-minute game, and we know that Penn State was able to stay in it until the end. Well, it matters because Indiana's start set the tone for the entire game. It was a statement that this is our floor, you're in our house, and we're going to control this game until the final buzzer, which Indiana, for the most part, did. And unfortunately, that hasn't been the case consistently inside of Simon Scott Assembly Hall this year. Consider the Indiana State and Fort Wayne games, the ghosts of which will be haunting us all year. In each of those games, against teams Indiana should have been able to control for 40 minutes, the Hoosiers allowed the Sycamores and the Mastodons to control the action early and build confidence. Confidence and control, which obviously never went away. Indiana State led 12-6 at the first TV timeout, and their lead had ballooned to 28-15 by the second one. Fort Wayne led 11-8 at the first TV timeout, and while the Hoosiers rebounded in that game to actually lead at halftime, the tone was set early on that Indiana would not be imposing its will on that night. So I take Indiana's start against Penn State as an important sign of progress because for the first time all year, Indiana followed up an impressive victory, the road win at Minnesota, by coming out of the gate strong at home. And now, on Sunday, we'll see if these Hoosiers are capable of doing it again against Northwestern. All right, now let me introduce my esteemed co-host for this week's show. To my left, We have one of the world's most respected bracketologists who recently released his first bracket projections of the season over at InsideTheHall.com. And he is the longtime president of the Robert Johnson Fan Club. He is Andy Bottoms. Andy, what is your Bottoms line on the past week in IU basketball?
You know, it's funny to look back at probably the tone of our show last week to this week, you know, on the heels of that Wisconsin loss and then what's happened since then. I think if you break down the season into this kind of chunk, it's pretty reflective of how I think everybody has felt over the course of it, where things can ebb and flow and change pretty quickly. But a really good week for IU. And I think, as you said, good, not just in the sense that they won both games, but I think in the sense that they were able to, you know, build on a performance as opposed to taking a step back. And so as you look at the stretch we kind of talked about before, if ever there was a time that this team could start to make a little headway, whether that's to an NIT berth, just to looking at progress from, you know, week to week, this seemed to be a stretch where they could get some momentum with, you know, 3 out of 4 at home. That Penn State game was obviously the first of that. You know, with Northwestern at home, obviously a difficult trip, but a kind of nothing to lose trip to East Lansing following that, and then a home game against a struggling Maryland team. So, you know, so they're 25% of the way through that stretch, and they played well in that game. And I think Northwestern looked pretty good against Minnesota. I think it was last night. I think it was Wednesday night. So they're looking a little bit rejuvenated, I think, after that. But again, if you want to be optimistic about this team, I think you have to assume that that's the kind of home game that they need to win and continue to show that growth. So in a time where I don't know if they'll, you know, in a season that saw 2 20-point losses at home to in-state schools, I don't know if a loss at Wisconsin can be considered the low point, but in some ways it really felt like it was. It felt like that, you know, that progress had been lost again. And then, you know, you turn around, you know, 7-8 days later and it feels quite a bit different despite losing one of the guys that everybody was going to really rely on coming into the season. So, you know, I think a weird week emotionally, I think, for fans of the program. And I think the weirdness of it probably fits well with how the season has gone so far.
And to my right, we have a man who will thoroughly enjoy this fact. Appalachian State's football team had a higher average attendance than the San Diego or LA Chargers did this year. He's a columnist for The Big Lead, and he is someone who so flagrantly and erroneously refuses to acknowledge the enduring greatness of Brian Evans that we might have to tie him to a chair and force him to watch tape of the 95-96 Hoosiers, which is, of course, the team that Brian Evans led to a second-place finish in the Big Ten while scoring 21.2 points, 7.1 rebounds, and dishing out 4.1 assists per game en route to a well-deserved Big Ten Player of the Year award. He is Ryan Phillips. Ryan, what is your rant from the past week in Indiana basketball?
My rant's going to start with champions or nothing, Jared. He didn't lead him to a Big Ten title, so why should I remember it?
Although Purdue had to vacate that, so technically Indiana finished in a tie for first.
I know. I guess I just have to mention the Deron Davis news. I think he, you know, out for the year with a torn Achilles. That's going to be a real long road back for Deron. And I, you know, our thoughts are with him because that is about as devastating an injury as you can get for an athlete. A lot of guys don't come back from it at all. So it's going to be a really, really long, difficult road back for him. And here's hoping that he can come back and actually, you know, play again. He's still got 2 years of eligibility left. Though I'm not sure this is the plan, I wouldn't be entirely shocked if he just went ahead and redshirted next year and took the time to heal fully, because the injury is almost certainly going to last into next season, the recovery from it. Going to be, you know, again, really difficult for Indiana now moving forward without him. Though they've played well without him, there's going to be times where their size is really, you know, the lack of size is really going to show up. So I, if I'm Archie Miller, I start getting Clifton more ready to play, because you're going to need that depth at some point. You know, maybe we even see Tim Priller if he can get out of that walking boot. I don't know if he's still in it or not, but you know, I think that it's probably time to start looking to rely on some of those guys, because you're going to need them at some point in Big Ten play, and it should, you know, probably be in the team's best interest to have them ready to go.
All right, well, here's what we're going to discuss this week. We're going to talk a little bit more about Deron Davis here right off the top, and then we'll dig into Indiana's three-point shooting woes a little bit. We will take this opportunity while things are, while we're kind of feeling good here, to indulge in our optimistic side and discuss the most optimistic but still realistic scenarios that we can paint for the rest of the season. And then we answer your questions, including this gem that was sent in our Slack group. If we could ask Archie Miller one question and he had to answer truthfully, what would it be? That one should be a fun one to kick around. All of that coming on this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio. Now, this quick reminder before we move forward, the next time that you're looking for tickets to a sporting event or a concert, remember our friends at SeatGeek. You can download their app, which is incredibly convenient and easy to use. I have it on my phone. Or if you just want an easy-to-remember URL that will take you directly to the IU basketball ticket listings on SeatGeek's website, here's the URL, iutickets.shop. So, for example, you know, if you want tickets to this weekend's game against Northwestern or any of the home games coming up, or shoot, any of the road games, if you're going to be in one of those cities, SeatGeek has you covered and at the best price that you will find anywhere. Check out the latest ticket deals on the SeatGeek app or, again, at iutickets.shop. And if it's your first time using SeatGeek, don't forget the promo code Assembly. Just got an email this morning, actually, from a longtime Assembly Call listener who said she purchased tickets and used the promo code and it all worked great. So use that promo code when you make your first purchase. You will get $20 back after that purchase. Again, the promo code is Assembly, A-S-S-E-M-B-L-Y. You are listening to the Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morse here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms. And let's linger a little bit, Ryan, on Deron Davis. I'm glad that you brought him up. Obviously, you know, as you said, we wish Deron well, as speedy a recovery as possible, as healthy and full a recovery as possible. You know, listening to Archie's radio show from Thursday night, you know, the prognosis obviously is full recovery. He said it was really just kind of a freak thing. He was, I think, you know, they were doing, you know, running back and forth, and he just turned on the baseline and it just kind of snapped. Like it just.
With an Achilles, it usually is something freak like that. It's rarely a contact thing. It just.
Yeah. You know, I mean, just
turn it the wrong way and it goes.
Which is just terrible. So Andy, let me ask you this. I mean, obviously Indiana has fared well without Deron. You know, they've won two games without him. I don't necessarily think that they've won because he hasn't been in there, but they certainly have, you know, rallied around each other since the injury, you know, doing some things differently on offense and defense, as we discussed on this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink. But as you look forward now, you know, Indiana was able to play Minnesota without Reggie Lynch, their big man down low. Penn State had Mike Watkins, but not a whole lot of depth down there. You know, you got games coming up against Michigan State and against Purdue, you know, teams that have a lot of depth down low. Those are the kind of games where we're really going to miss Deron, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the Purdue one is one everybody keeps throwing out. I think it's interesting because they're in some ways in a similar position with Haas as what IU was with Davis, where defensively teams have really tried to take advantage of him by pulling him out on the floor and putting him in, you know, pick and roll scenarios. And I think in an ideal world, you know, you kind of talk about, you know, optimistic view, you know, that we'll get into a little bit later for the team. I think, is that a scenario where we're making comments about IU the same way we made comments of other teams, of they're taking advantage of that obvious deficiency? And so how does IU go about doing that? And I think we've seen a little bit of that in these last couple games. I mean, you've seen, I think the motion off the ball has been better. I think they've pulled guys away from the basket and they've got a lot of plays with guys cutting to the basket and getting passes. I think Robert Johnson got a few of those in the Minnesota game. I thought, you know, Ryan Carrazza on Inside the Hall did a good job of detailing a couple of those kinds of plays from the Penn State game where, you know, Hartman had a couple, you know, cuts toward the basket. So I think it does allow IU to kind of pull everybody away, open up some lanes to drive or cut to the hoop. You know, the Michigan State game, I think, is going to be challenging. But again, I kind of put it in the.
That'd be challenging. I have 7-footers on the floor, though.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. I mean, as long as Miles Bridges wants to continue like playing on the perimeter, I mean, let that continue to happen. But, you know, it's what we talked about with Deron earlier in the season. You know, for the advantage that he might bring you, other teams are taking advantage of it. So now, you know, IU kind of has to go the other way and say, look, you got to have Nick Ward try to guard Juwan Morgan. Can he really do that? I'm not sure that he can. So I think you got to, you know, look at it that way. Because there's obviously nobody that's going to step in and be able to play that role. But I think it's done some good things for IU from a spacing perspective. But same way with Deron, if you don't take advantage of that advantage that you have, then you're just going to get pounded inside. And certainly depth from a foul perspective becomes a really huge key.
Ryan?
Yeah, I think, look, I said it in the intro, I think you've really got to get Clifton more ready to play, because he's a guy who can hold the ball, handle the ball in the perimeter a little bit. He's more of a face-up guy. So he's a guy who, I mean, the reason NBA teams were talking about him is because he's got a little of that, you know, 6'10 guy who can dribble and drive and play on the perimeter ability. He's not developed enough yet, but he's a guy who can certainly hold his own out there. I don't know how he's been developing. I don't know how he's been practicing any of that, but you are going to need, at some point, you're going to need length and size. And he gives you both of those things. I know I've talked about it many times. He needs to eat about 85,000 ham sandwiches and just gain some weight, but.
And he probably has to make a lot of progress. Cause I mean, he's not even cracking the rotation at this point on a team that's had depth issues down low as it is.
Absolutely. But you've played him this year, so he's not redshirting. So you might as well use him and get some length in there. And I'm not saying play him 20 minutes a game, but you know, use him to eat fouls. You know, when you got to take Juwan Morgan off the floor for a few minutes, put him in there. I realize you're going to spread the floor more. I realize you're going to, you know, try and create driving lanes, try and create cutting lanes. But at the same time, with a weak shooting team, you know, teams are just going to start backing off and daring Indiana to shoot. And quite frankly, I'm not confident they can win that way at all. In the past, maybe I would be, but not this year. And so I do think you're going to have to get some other guys in there. Justin Smith's another guy who's probably going to have to play more. I mean, I know he's been starting, but he's going to have to deal with whatever his foul trouble was in the last game and maybe play through some foul trouble and get out there and mix it up, because I think you're going to need some of that length and athleticism. He's going to have to swing down, maybe play more of a stretch four instead of a three on the perimeter. So, yeah, I think that you're going to have to start getting some other guys involved, because, again, size is not something that is this team's strong suit, especially now with Davis out.
Well, you mentioned shooting. Hold that thought, because coming up on the Assembly Call, we're going to dig into Indiana's outside shooting woes a little bit and assess if there's reason for hope that they will improve. Spoiler alert, I think there is. That's coming next. Hey, just a real quick note here. The next time that you are going to shop online for IU gear, use the URL iustore.shop. That will take you to the official IU online store, where they have anything you could possibly want. Candy stripe pants, the Script Indiana warm-up shirt, all kinds of IU gear. And that URL, iustore.shop, is actually our affiliate URL. So when you use it and buy something, we get paid a commission. So it's a great way for you to shop for the IU gear that you need and to support the Assembly Call at the same time. Again, the URL is iustore.shop. Please bookmark it and use it the next time you're looking to buy IU gear. We appreciate it. Now back to the show. You are listening to the Assembly Call. I am Jared Morris, here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips. Don't forget, if you ever have to miss all or part of an episode of Assembly Call Radio, there are two great ways to catch up. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for Assembly Call. Or you can join our live Thursday night broadcast or watch the video replays by subscribing to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/assemblycall. So, Ryan, you mentioned in the last segment that this is not a good shooting Indiana team, and that is clear. Everybody who has watched this team play knows.
I really put on my analyst hat to come up with that one.
Well,
the hottest of hot takes there. Yeah, that was really.
Yes. Well, I mean, and look, I mean, the numbers bear it out. Indiana is shooting 30.5% from 3-point range this year, which is 319th in the country. And for a little bit of context, Tom Crean's first Indiana team, which went 6-25, they shot 33.3% from 3-point range, thanks to Matt Roth and the legendary Devin Dumas. So,
Devin Dumas is legendary.
I know. So
stopped after you said thanks to Matt Roth.
We've got a really thin veneer for legendary, don't we?
Yes.
319th in the nation in 3-point shooting. Is that bad? I feel like that's pretty bad.
Is that bad? That's bad. And that matches what we've seen. And we're coming off a game where Indiana shot, you know, 22% from 3-point range. To their credit, they won. But, you know, as I started looking at this, this is not a good 3-point shooting team. I don't think that it can become a good 3-point shooting team. But I do think that it's reasonable to expect them to go from absolutely atrocious, where they are right now, to average. You know, and maybe the final numbers don't show it, but all that matters from this point forward is what they do over the next 14, 15 games for the rest of the season. So, you know, is there reason to hope? And there's a couple reasons why I think that there is. Number one, look at the four guys who are taking the most three-pointers for Indiana. Robert Johnson, Devontae Green, Josh Newkirk, and Colin Hartman. All of those guys are shooting worse right now than their established career averages. And obviously, some guys have a bigger sample size than others. You know, Robert Johnson shooting 9 percentage points less from three-point range this year than his career average means a lot more than Devontae Green's, because Robert has 3 seasons worth of a sample, whereas Devontae Green, you know, we only saw him take 55 attempts last year. So we don't really know yet what is more like him. Is he more the 44% shooter from last year or the 28% shooter from this year? But, you know, Josh Newkirk is shooting slightly worse than he normally does. Colin Hartman is shooting about 7.5 points worse than he normally does. So I think if those guys just start to shoot closer to their established levels, that right there will be a little bit of improvement. And if you start talking about 1 or 2 made threes a game, that can be pretty significant, because we know that Indiana's going to be in a lot of close games here. But here's the biggest reason why I think there's room for improvement. And it comes back to Robert Johnson, because look, he's the guy who's taking the most threes. He's the guy who has the longest established track record. So I think we can trust more what he's done before and think, hey, maybe he'll start shooting closer to that. Well, if you go to Synergy Sports and if you look at his numbers as a spot up shooter, there is a clear outlier, and it is this season. And it is particularly striking in unguarded catch and shoot situations. So when he's, you know, not off a dribble, when he's just catching a pass and he's open to shoot it, this has always been an area where he has succeeded. And as a freshman, he shot 52% in these situations. That was in the 91st percentile nationally. As a sophomore, he shot 53.5%. That was in the 94th percentile. As a junior, he shot 55.6%. That was in the 95th percentile. Are you sensing a trend here, right? And he was taking around one of these attempts per game. So he was getting a decent amount of them and hitting them at an elite clip. This year, Robert is 31% in unguarded catch and shoot situations, which is in the 29th percentile, and he's averaging close to 2 of those attempts per game. So if he just brings that up, you know, to 40%, which is still significantly less than how he normally shoots, that right there is going to be a pretty big improvement over what we've seen so far this year. And look, I know you can't just look at the numbers in a vacuum. Like, we've seen Robert struggling with his confidence and his shot form has looked off. So maybe there are reasons to explain this beyond just, you know, kind of variance of a small sample size from only seeing the first half of the season. But I don't know, those numbers are pretty compelling to me for a guy who's played that many minutes that I have a hard time thinking he is not going to improve at least a little bit in those situations, and maybe even a lot given how good he's been in the past. So I wanted to throw that out there and see. I know, you know, Ryan, as you said, this is not going to be a team you're going to trust shooting-wise, but man, I really think that there's some room for improvement. And if they can improve in this specific area, like I said, that could be 4, 5, 6 points a game, which could make a huge difference.
I have one huge worry about this and a concern. If this were a Tom Crean team struggling shooting, I would say maybe it's an aberration, or maybe it's a few guys who are off and, you know, need to have little subtle shifts to their motion and things like that. The thing that worries me is this is a new coaching staff, and it's everybody is off and everybody is lower. As you pointed out, those numbers, it's significant. It's not, you know, Rojo's not off 3%. He's off 9%. Colin Hartman is off 7.5%. Devontae Green's off 15%. Again, small sample size from him last year, but still, my worry is that maybe this has to do with this coaching staff just not spending as much time on shooting as the past one did. We know that Tom Crean, you know, spent a lot of time on the offense, a lot of time on jump shooting, a lot of time on three-point shooting. He would set up, you know, the NBA lines during practice so guys would get used to shooting them from deep. He had a specific guy on his staff who was essentially a shot doctor, and Tim Buckley. Maybe the team, you know, specifically these players, reacted well to that and the repetitions and the drills and all of that stuff. And Archie Miller and his staff are more focused on defense, are more focused on getting the ball into the paint, are more focused from scoring 2-pointers and specific, you know, offensive drills that don't necessarily involve jump shooting. That could be the reason here. And it makes sense to me, because you see the one thing that's changed for some of these guys is the coaching staff. I mean, that's what's changed for Robert Johnson from last year to this year is the system and the staff. What's changed for Colin Hartman? What's changed for Josh Newkirk? What's changed for Devontae Green is the coaching staff. So maybe it's a situation where, you know, maybe Archie didn't, his past teams didn't have to rely on shooting as much or didn't need those specific things that the past coaching staff was doing to get their shots going. And maybe he just is still adjusting to his personnel and his personnel is still adjusting to him and the system. That's my concern. That it might take all year and this might be a year long thing. And it's just, you know, one of those things where there's just not a matchup between what the coaching staff is trying to do and the personnel, and they need stuff that he's not giving them and he needs stuff from them that he's not going to get. So again, we've come back to this a lot this year, but these aren't the players he brought in to fit his system. These are guys who were already here, and he may like some of these guys and think they fit specific things, but they're not doing the things, you know, as far as shooting goes, they're not doing what, you know, this offense needs done.
No, I'll grant you that. And that does make some sense, especially for maybe guys like, you know, Newkirk, who's just a few percentage points off. But man, Johnson is so far off. I feel like what you're saying could make sense and he could still improve a little bit. Just, you know, again,
sure. Yeah.
You know, there's gotta
be, look, his shot is completely off. If for everybody watching, if you watch when he shoots, his entire body is shifting to the left and he's falling away when he shoots every single time. He had 1-3 from the right wing on TV. They were going left to right. He had 1-3 that he stepped into from the right wing that was the only shot this season I've thought that's going in. That looks good. The only one for Robert Johnson. I used to say that all the time for him. And this year, that was the only time he shot. And I was confident that shot was going in and said good when he shot it. Other than that, he is having some serious issues. He's over rotating his body and falling backwards, which are two things you never do on a shot if you want it to go in. And he's just, he looks off balance when he lands. There's so many things wrong with his shot. I will tell you, the one guy who looks great when he shoots is in one specific spot on the floor. It's Josh Newkirk from straight on. If he shoots from straight on, it looks great. That everywhere else, I think it looks like a mess, but it looks great when Josh Newkirk lines up from straight on, and you've seen him hit a lot of those this year. Robert Johnson, something's up and something is different, and I don't know what it is specifically.
Well, and I want to get Andy's thoughts. One thing I do want to say, because I know, you know, a lot of people may think, well, he's just, you know, he's not getting as many open looks. And actually, you know, his percentage of unguarded looks is roughly what it was when he was a sophomore. And so that, you know, he's still getting a lot of open looks. He's just not knocking them down. Anyway,
was his sophomore year his best shooting year? Percentage-wise?
By far, yes, by
yeah,
far.
I thought so.
Yeah. You're listening to The Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms, breaking down Indiana's shooting woes as I desperately try to give us all hope that the shooting will improve. Again, not to a great level, maybe not even to a good level. I'm just looking for average, hoping we can get there, perhaps grasping at straws, reading too much into numbers. But Andy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ryan talks about Johnson's shooting form. There was a shot, I think it was in the first half of the Penn State game. And if you want to see just how far left he fell, he shot it from the baseline. So he had a really good angle of how far it was. I mean, he really, really is drifting to the left. So yeah, I mean, I think he's struggling a bit. I you know, the one thing I think is clear with him is that no matter what the numbers say, he's clearly more comfortable taking those threes in those catch and shoot situations. There were a couple late shot clock, you know, situations where, you know, in a lot of cases that Devontae Green is going to, you know, put a few moves on, take a step back three or something like that. Johnson ended up either giving the ball up or kind of just dribbled in trouble, just couldn't really create that space for himself. And I think a little bit of that is confidence, but I think a little bit of just where he's comfortable. So I was surprised when you kind of talked about how many, you know, that he's getting at least two of those looks a game. Cause I think my initial thought was, well, maybe those, he's just not getting as many of those kinds of looks, or percentage wise of the shots he's taking, how many of them are in that scenario. And it seems like it's as many, if not more. So I think there's some truth to it. But I would definitely say from a form standpoint, you know, I think Ryan even mentioned Colin Hartman after the game against Penn State, or maybe it was somebody else, but you know, he's really fallen backwards on his, just the number of guys who are taking like kind of good squared up shots. And I do think there's probably a little bit of truth there. I mean, you know, you heard so many times when Green was there, how much they talked about shooting and the repetition and those kinds of things. And when you're IU and you're trying to put in, you know, the defense are trying to put in and things like that, maybe some of those things go by the wayside or are more reliant on players getting shots up outside of that, you know,
yeah,
normal
that's
time.
What I also think.
That's a great point. I mean, it explains a lot, I think.
Yeah. And it might be the kind of thing where Archie is the kind of coach where he wants those players to, like Andy said, get the work done on their shot on their own, you know, work on individual stuff on individual time. And we're working on team stuff and team time, you know, so that's just a different philosophy. And a lot of coaches do that. I mean, a lot of coaches rely on players to work on their own individual games, you know, grab a coach, grab a manager, whatever, and work on it. But some guys need specific instruction, and that's just the way they learn. It's different learning, the way it's just different the way they learn. But what I want to say on Johnson's shot, and when you see somebody rotate their body on their shot, it means they're putting way too much arm into the shot because it's forcing their shoulder to sort of move with the ball. And it means that he's overshooting it. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's always going to go long, because it's one of those things where he could go up with too much arm and at the last minute kind of release, knowing that he's using too much arm. So it'll come short. It'll go sideways. It'll go wherever. But when you see a guy over rotate like that, it's a clear sign that something is up. And so something is definitely up. He's always had a little bit of that in his shot. But now, as Andy said, he's like falling out of bounds when he's on the sideline. And it's so noticeable. And it's something I'm sure he's working on and I'm sure he's aware of. But it'd be impossible to miss on film. But it's one of those things where in games, it's not getting better.
One other thing
Just real quick, it's interesting to hear Archie talk about it because he references it so often that, like, these guys can shoot and they make shots and I just am waiting for them to make shots in a game. And it's like one of those where it's like, I want to believe you, but are you just trying to talk yourself into the fact that that's going
to
happen?
He
must be looking at the same stats as Jared is. So then maybe he's onto something. I don't know.
You know, he might be trying to talk them into a little confidence, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a confidence thing for sure. And yeah, you might be right that there's some truth to that, but I mean, he seems to go out of his way at times to talk about it. You know, came up, you know, one of the first things it felt like that he talked about in the, you know, after the Penn State game, although it's funny because, I think it was Josh Margolis who asked him after the Minnesota game about like seeing a few threes go in early. And then it was like, relative to what you've done this year. And he's like, well, if we make one, it's good for this year. So it was a pretty good exchange.
Very true.
Hey, so the last point that I want to make about this is that, you know, all four of those guys are shooting better from the free throw line this year than they have at any other point in their career. And that at least suggests that, you know, their shot isn't totally broken, because, you know, in fact, you know, you read a lot of articles by NBA scouts as they're trying to project guys forward to the next level. They look at their free throw percentage more than they even look at their 3-point percentage in college, because it tends to translate more. So that's the other thing that I think at least shows, you know, that these guys have a good shooting stroke. It's just not translating right now to the 3-point line. So I still think there's some reason to hope that they can marginally improve. And again, even just marginal improvement is going to make a big difference for a team that's in a lot of close games.
Well, and on the free throw line, there's a lot less thinking that goes on. You get the ball from the ref, you bounce it twice, and you shoot it. Some guys do take a long time and think about it, and guys like Shaq who used to do that, and it's always bad. And a lot of these guys, it's just become a repetition thing. And when they catch it on the wing and square up and they haven't been shooting well, it gets into their head by the time they release the ball. Also, I would say, the reason why they look at free throw percentage over 3-point percentage is free throws are very indicative of release and rotation. Those are the two things you need on a free throw. You don't need to get your legs involved very much. You don't need to overextend with your arms, things like that. It's just release and get the ball to backspin. And so that is indicative of a guy with a good shooting stroke. You're absolutely right. And that's, you know, that just becomes the problem for this IU team because, again, it's not translating to the 3-point line.
I greatly look forward to the I told you so after we hit 17 threes on Sunday against Northwestern. It's going to be
good
awesome.
Luck.
It's not actually, like we're going to be upset about it if it happens. And it, you know, not like you need to take a victory lap.
Ooh, we
like,
hit a ton of threes and we won.
Yeah, we hit a ton of threes. Yeah. You guys are idiots. I hope you're not enjoying this at all. Believe me, we'll be enjoying it. Don't worry.
If Northwestern hits 17 threes, we're going to spit roast him.
All right. Coming up, we indulge our optimistic side and paint the best scenarios that we think are realistic for the rest of the season. Stick with us on the Assembly Call. Listening to the Assembly Call, go to assemblycall.com/join right now to learn how to subscribe to our email newsletter. If you want to get more out of being an IU basketball fan, then you need to be on our newsletter list. You will get our weekly Six Banner Sunday news roundups as well as our post-game analysis emails. It is all free and it will make you a smarter IU basketball fan. Again, the URL is assemblycall.com/join. I am Jared Morris here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips, and you know, things are good right now. Indiana's 1-2 in a row. We're above 500 in Big Ten play. And so we thought that this would be a good opportunity to, you know, kind of indulge our optimism a little bit and carry the good times forward. And so the challenge here is basically for each of us to paint the most optimistic scenario that we can foresee for the rest of the season that is also realistic. You know, so not, you know, Indiana, you know, running the table or anything like that, but what do we actually think is realistic that we think has a chance to happen? So let me kick this off, and then we'll get Andy and Ryan, your guys' scenarios as well. So for my scenario, obviously, you know, going off of what we talked about in the last segment, I think it starts with Robert Johnson becoming a better shooter and starting to make some of those unguarded catch and shoot threes. And I think it's reasonable to think that that will happen. I think obviously, you know, Juwan Morgan's going to have to stay healthy. He's going to have to maintain his efficiency and finish, you know, around where he's at right now, which would be at, you know, a second team all Big Ten level, if not a first team all Big Ten level. He's going to have to play that good. And then the X factor for me is Devontae Green. You know, I think we really saw some positive signs from him in that Penn State game. If he can use that as a template and start to turn a corner and play more consistently like that, I think that's a big part of the formula for how Indiana reaches what I think is the most optimistic finish. So here's what I think is possible. I think Indiana can finish 4-1 in the home games they have against Northwestern, Maryland, Minnesota, Illinois, and Ohio State. Win 4 of those, lose 1. I think they can finish 1-2 against Michigan State and Purdue. Obviously, you're going to lose to Michigan State on the road, but if that Simon Scott Assembly Hall magic can kick in for one of those games, you finish 1-2 there and then get 2 out of the other 5 games on the road. So you play Illinois, Ohio State, Rutgers, Iowa, and Nebraska on the road. So that would be a 7-6 finish, which would mean a 10-8 record overall in Big Ten play, and you'd be 17-13 overall. Now, if I were, you know, if I had to bet money on this, I would say that 6-7 is probably more likely, because they'll probably either lose all 3 of those to Michigan State and Purdue, and maybe, you know, not win 2 of those other road games. But we're going for optimism, so I'll stick with 7-6, and then I say, you know, get a bye in the Big Ten tournament, win your first game, and then probably lose to Michigan State or Purdue in the semifinal of the Big Ten tournament. So, you know, Andy, to me,
wait a minute. Why don't you have any faith in us in the Big Ten tournament, Jared? I don't understand.
Why would you interrupt me for a question that ridiculous? You know, full well.
Because it's what I do.
So, you know, Andy, when I look at that, I feel like that kind of finish would get us mentioned on the bubble, but we'd probably end up in the NIT, which, look, given where things are, I think finishing in the NIT, you know, would be okay for this team. Do you think that kind of finish would get Indiana on the bubble? Is that something that could even get them into the tournament, depending on what kind of carnage there is around the bubble? What do you think?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that ends up 18-14. You know, you've got the 2 really bad losses. I think the problem with the Big Ten this year is that it's still pretty early to start looking at the RPI. But I mean, really, if you looked right now from a truly quality win standpoint, there's really 4 teams that are probably top 50, I want to say, maybe top 40 in the RPI, and that's obviously, you know, Michigan State, Purdue, Ohio State, Michigan. There might be somebody else just outside the top 45. I want to say Minnesota's right in there, but probably falling. So I just don't know that there are a lot of decent wins. There just aren't a lot of great wins to be had. And I think in order to erase the couple of home losses that, you know, we all want to forget about, I think they got to do more than that. I don't think ending 4 games over 500 in total and 2 games over in a mediocre league would be enough.
Okay. What is your optimistic/realistic scenario?
Well, I don't know. I feel like mine might be slightly more optimistic than yours, which maybe means that I took this too far. So I think, you know, obviously from an individual player standpoint, I think that the things that you mentioned are good. You know, what I'll say about Juwan Morgan is when you look at his numbers, I was watching, I forget which game was on tonight. I guess it was Ohio State and Maryland. And they were talking about, you know, some kind of like, I don't know how they phrase it, like under the radar, some kind of like Big Ten MVP. And they had 3 guys from Michigan State on there, which is absurd. And Morgan was not mentioned at all. I didn't actually listen to what was said. So maybe there was something else there, but didn't really make sense to me. I mean, he at least needs to be in that conversation, not saying that he should win, not saying that he will win, but it seems strange to me that any kind of thing like that, he doesn't seem to be mentioning. But X factor for me, I'm going to say Justin Smith. And we talked about the front court, you know, depth issues and things like that. And by calling him the X factor, that doesn't mean it needs to be Minnesota level Justin Smith. but it also can't be Penn State level Justin Smith too often. So I think he's a guy who's got to give him minutes, be able to stretch the floor a little bit. You know, if he can have more games than that where he finds his way toward 8 or 10 points and 6 rebounds, I think that would be a success. But when you look at the record, I mean, if you want to say optimistic, there's 7 home games left. I mean, would it shock you to see this team win all any of those games individually? So if you want to be optimistic, let's say they win all 7. And then the road games.
So beating Michigan State and Purdue at home.
Hey, I mean.
All right. Saying this is the best case scenario that's possible.
The magic of Assembly Hall, right? I mean, if we're saying, you know, absolute best case, the team gets some momentum, crowd's crazy, they win some games at home. You know, then you've got road games. I think the at Michigan State game is a throwaway. I'm starting to feel like watching Ohio State play, the at Ohio State game is a throwaway. But then when you look at the other road games outside of that, you've got Illinois, you've got Rutgers, you've got Iowa, and you've got Nebraska. All those are outside of the top 80 on KenPom right now. I'm not going to go insane and say they win all 4 of those, but is it inconceivable that you win 2 of those games? Maybe not. I don't know. So I'm going to say you win half of those games. So you go 2 and 3 in those road games. That's 9 more Big Ten wins, which probably borders on insane, but it is what it is. So that puts you 12 and 6, which I'm still not even sure gets you in the tournament conversation. Given the other losses on the roster, but it certainly gives you a much better chance.
I just can't trust us enough at home to think we're going to win all 7 of those, given what we've seen in some
we're
seeing
most optimistic projections. No,
and realistic. It's got to be realistic. I'm just saying.
Who are you right now? You're the one painting this rosy picture for a team that's shooting 30% from three-point range.
How many times
are you telling me this team can't win 7 games at home?
How many times have we mentioned Fort Wayne and Indiana State tonight? Do we need to be reminded of how up and down this team has been at home? Right.
Somebody did just mention
them. So I have a hard time thinking they're going to win 7 straight home games against some of the teams they're playing.
I was having a good show until you mentioned that.
If we're being optimistic, I mean, to me, that is the... I mean, you said it has to be something that could actually happen. Yeah, I mean, is it unlikely given what we've seen from this team? But on a game-in and game-out basis, when teams come in to Assembly Hall, we would give them a chance to win against virtually anybody if the environment, you know, given how the environment will be and things like that. So in a best-case scenario, you win all of those, right?
Okay.
So I don't know. That's my thought. I don't know. I mean, I think absolute best case is they find a way to sneak into the tournament. I think that is a long shot at this point. But if you go 9-4 down the stretch and you have win it maybe a couple games in the Big Ten tournament, I think it's a more conceivable argument. But yeah, you got to get yourself probably close to 20 wins at some point, which that would get you. If they win 9 more, that's 19. Win a game in the Big Ten tournament, that's 20. I think there's at least a conversation to be had there. But I think, you know, more likely is being able to play their way in the NIT. And I think given the way the season's gone and everything that's happened, I would be fine with that. You know, as you kind of reset expectations going on now. So I'll shut up and let Ryan give his optimistic prediction.
Andy,
so Jared can tear it down.
No, I look forward to your negative attitude. I look forward to your I told you so on this one. Yeah, Very much so.
I'm kind of with Andy. I have my best case scenario.
Now I feel worse about it.
Yeah, I know. You probably should. My best case scenario is them finishing 12-6 in the Big Ten. That's best case. I think they can beat Northwestern. Lose to Michigan State. I think they can beat Maryland at home, beat Iowa on the road or Illinois on the road versus Purdue. Look, that's a rivalry game and it's at Assembly Hall. That could be the one big upset this year that Indiana pulls I think that one, there's more of a chance than Michigan State. I just think that there's a matchup there. And the fact that it's the in-state rivalry, you got your new coach trying to prove something. I could see that being the upset. I got them losing that Ohio State, losing to Michigan State, beating Rutgers, beating Minnesota at home, beating Illinois. I think they can win at Iowa. We saw Iowa. Iowa ain't good. And they have the confidence that they beat Iowa. And I think they can win at Nebraska. And then you get the Ohio State game at home to finish the season.
We're going to be there. They've never lost with us in attendance.
That's another crapshoot. But if they win those, and that's not even including beating Purdue. If they win those, that's 9. And 9 more wins down the stretch, that's 12, and that gets you to 12-6. And if you're 12-6 in the Big Ten and you win a couple games in the Big Ten tournament, you're certainly in consideration. But I think that, yeah, some of those losses early in the season will keep them out. But at least you're giving yourself a chance. That said, that's not what I think will happen, but that's the best case with the way this is laid out. And I think the X factor, I agree with Andy again. I think it's Justin Smith. He's got to be on the floor. He's got to be help because he can help on both ends of the floor. Let's be real. With his athleticism and his length and his basketball IQ, he can help on both ends of the floor. And this team's going to need help on both ends of the floor because there's going to be a game where Juwan Morgan's going to get into foul trouble. It's going to happen. And there'll be awful calls and we'll be really mad about it, but there's nothing you can do about it. And
he's not going to play 39 minutes without fouling every game.
Yeah. Somebody's got to step up. And I think Justin Smith is a guy who can step up. I think Colin Hartman's a guy who can step up. I think you're going to, and that's why I said, you're going to have to get Clifton Moore ready because he's going to need to play some minutes, to eat some minutes. And you're going to need a guy like Freddie McSwain in one game, to win or two games, to step up and give you a solid performance. So, you know, you're going to need help from everybody to get there, but I think that that's the best case realistic scenario.
Yeah, I mean, individually with all those games, that totally makes sense. I just have a hard time, you know,
kind of
stepping back on that macro level, trusting the team enough to do that, but I hope they can.
If I had to put money on it, I wouldn't say it's going to happen, but I mean, yeah. we're talking, you know, optimism. We won two games in a row. We get a chance to be optimistic. Maybe get a three-game winning streak this weekend.
Hey.
Something I dreamed would never happen again. You know, we're taking baby steps here, right?
All right. Well, give us your the most optimistic scenario that you think is also realistic. Send us a tweet at Assembly Call. Let us know. Coming up on the Assembly Call in our final segment, we've got some great listener questions, including one about what question we would ask Archie Miller if we could ask him any question and he had to answer. That should be fun. Stick with us. You are listening to the Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips, wrapping up another week of talking IU hoops. And we've got a few listener questions here we want to get to. And the first one, it's definitely one of the best questions that's been sent in. This is from Rob in our Slack group. And if you use Slack and if you want to get in that Slack group where we talk IU hoops, just shoot me an email, jared@assemblycall.com. But here's Rob's question. If you had one question that you could ask Archie, assuming he has to answer it, what would you ask him? We can assume he's answering it behind closed doors to make it interesting. Andy, why don't you lead us off here?
Oh, I thought you were going to go first.
I can't. Well, okay. So here's the question that I would ask him. Especially given how McKinley Wright is playing for Colorado. And McKinley Wright is a guy that was committed to Archie at Dayton. I believe wanted to follow Archie here, but obviously when Archie showed up, we had like 17 guys, you know, who could have been on scholarship. But then, of course, you know, Thomas Bryant goes pro, James Blackman leaves, OG leaves, Grant Galen ended up leaving. You know, Curtis Jones obviously ended up transferring. He got all the new freshmen in. There wasn't a spot for McKinley Wright to have. But you look at it now, he's playing really well as a freshman. He obviously would have stepped in and gotten some significant minutes for a team that needs a point guard. I think the question that I would ask Archie is if he could go back and do it again, knowing what he knows now, would he treat that situation differently? Would he try to figure something out roster-wise to be able to get McKinley Wright on this roster? I know why he couldn't do it. It would have been a bad look, and obviously he needed to really, you know, treat the players that were in the program already well and make them the priority. But I just wonder in hindsight if he would think any differently about that. And obviously he would never answer that question publicly, so that's why you'd have to ask it behind closed doors. But I'd be really interested to see what his response would be to that. So that's my question. Andy, what do you have?
Mine would probably be something along the lines of, what is the furthest you'd be willing to go to get Romeo Langford? Something to that effect. I mean, that's the big question that everybody wants. That's the big guy. I mean, I think fans would do just about anything.
Are you asking how heavy the bag is going to be?
He can take the question however he wants.
How much do you need, Archie?
Yeah. Yeah, we can have a donation drive for the show. We just need a number that we need to. No, but I mean, I'd be curious. I think it would give insight into not only how important he thinks Romeo is for the future, but also kind of his moral compass, if you will, to give us an idea about it.
Because he would have to answer that truthfully. So that would be a good question to find that out. The other question I was going to ask is, do we still have a realistic shot? Like how much do you think we're really in this? Because obviously it's hard to find any of that out publicly. So that would be my other question for him. What do you got, Ryan?
I would ask him, shoot him up with True Serum, because the default answer is obvious, but shoot him up with True Serum and ask him, who's the better coach, you, your brother, or your father? Who is the better coach? Who does he truly deep down believe is the better coach of those three guys? And now, of course, if you ask him, he's going to tell you his dad. That's because every guy does it. But I want sodium pentothal in a syringe, shoot him up, and I want to know the answer. Who's the better coach between the three of them, and what makes them the best? Not just like, oh, he's the best, but is it because he's a great recruiter and he can develop players? Is it because of his tactical acumen? Is it because whatever? I want to know.
He's extremely deferential to his brother, too. It would actually not surprise me if he said his brother.
I agree, but that's why I want to know if that's for real or if he's it's his brother. He talks nice about him. I'm sure he would say his dad. I'm sure that would be his dad, legendary high school coach in Pennsylvania. I'm sure he would say his dad, but that's why I want the extra, the added benefit of True Serum
there. Yeah. Okay, so let's get through.
Kudos to none of us for starting the question with talk about and then saying something like that. So that was good.
No, yeah, true.
Good for us.
Very good. Is that a subtle shot at people in my profession, Andy?
Perhaps.
Not so subtle, actually.
Okay, so let's get some of these other ones. JMO asks us, why does VJ Blackman not even dress? Ryan, you think it's because you can only have a certain number of people dressing? And obviously the number one reason is because he's not a legitimate, you know, potential player at this point. Like, he's not going to see the court, and you can only have so many people dress.
Yeah, there's only going to be a certain amount of walk-ons on the bench at a time, and so he doesn't dress. I don't see that as being weird at all.
Yeah. Brian wonders, any reason why Clifton Moore isn't playing? I feel like he could give Morgan a breather from time to time. Might as well get his feet wet. Brian, Ryan absolutely agrees with you. And we get this question literally every week. Someone asks about Clifton Moore, and the answer doesn't change. Clifton Moore isn't playing in games because he's not earning it in practice. And when he does get a few minutes in games, you know, he's not overwhelming you to say, hey, maybe this is just a gamer and he's not a practice type player. So until he starts producing in practice, he's not going to be playing in the game. Another question, I forgot to write down who sent this one in, so my apologies, but which Justin Smith do you think we will see more of this season? Minnesota Justin Smith or Penn State Justin Smith? Ryan and Andy, from your answers in our last segment, it sounds like you both believe we're not going to see Minnesota Justin Smith every game, but you think it'll be closer to that than what we saw against Penn State, correct?
I think it'll be somewhere in the middle.
Sure you're going to see much of either of those extremes going forward. I mean, I think everybody would be pretty happy if it was somewhere in the middle. I think you got a better chance to see another one or two, you know, kind of breakout performances like you did against Minnesota, probably more so than you see a chance to have one or two, you know, games where he hardly plays and hardly scores.
Yeah. And let's see. The final question, this is from Derek. Tom Crean even said that we were low basketball IQ. Will emphasis on recruiting the Midwest give us a better coached recruit? How do the current players compare to 2018 recruits as far as being on winning programs and on winning teams? You know, I know that Demezi Anderson's team right now is ranked number one in the state. Jerome Hunter's team is obviously doing well. Rob Finnessy's team is struggling a little bit as they transition to a new coach, but they are a team that, you know, they were in the state title a couple years ago. That McCutcheon program is a really good program. So I don't know if either of you has any insight on this, but it sounds like Archie is really committed to recruiting guys who are from winning programs and that understand what a winning culture is all about.
Go ahead.
No, I think that's part of the focus for any top recruiter. You want to recruit top players, but you also want to recruit guys from good programs. And I think that's a huge, huge element of recruiting.
Yeah. Andy.
Yeah. I mean, he said he wants guys that hate to lose. And I think whether that's IQ related or not, I think there's a lot of that in the players that you see coming in.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you for those questions. That will do it for us on this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live and be part of the live chat, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording, or you can always subscribe to our podcast by searching for Assembly Call wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, go to assemblycall.com/join to join our free email newsletter. Thank you for listening. We will be back to talk IU hoops again with you next week. Until then, keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers. Thank you for being here and for listening to this episode of the Assembly Call. We appreciate it. And we really do rely on the support of audience members like you to keep our show going and to keep growing. And so we have set up a page on our website at assemblycall.com/support that lists 5 ways that you can support the Assembly Call. And we encourage you to choose whichever method is the easiest and most convenient for you. One of the methods is donating, and so many of you have donated, and we appreciate it so much. On that page, you can choose a monthly recurring donation or an annual recurring donation or just a one-time donation, whatever works for you. And if you don't want to donate, another way to support the show is you can use our affiliate URLs, iutickets.shop or iustore.shop, when you're going to shop for tickets or gear, and we will get paid a small commission when you use those links. But however you support the show, we appreciate it. Thank you.